Iranians head to the polls next week to vote in a new 290-member parliament. Campaigning officially began on Wednesday in an atmosphere of anger and frustration. The economic situation in Iran is dire. The World Bank estimates Iran's economy shrank 90% in 2019. And after the Trump administration withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA, sanctions have restricted Iran's ability to sell oil by an estimated 80%. Then, of course, there's the ramifications of the assassination of military leader Qasem Soleimani and Iran's error of shooting down a Ukrainian airliner with 140 Iranians on board. All of that came in the midst of a series of mass protests against government and religious leaders in which hundreds were killed. Iran's parliamentary elections are significant in themselves, but also they tend to be a guide to the presidential election, which is in the following year. For more on the election situation, I'm joined now by Garrett Nader, the managing editor of the US Institute for Peace's Iran Primer, a useful source of analysis on Iranian politics, economy, foreign policy, and the nuclear program. Garrett, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you, Julian. Pleasure to be here.
Can I start by asking you just to give us a snapshot of Iran's electoral system? Who's eligible to vote and to run? And how free and fair are these elections likely to be?
So let's go back to October when you had an outpouring of public interest in running for office. A record number of candidates signed up, over 16,000. The Interior Ministry then disqualified about 1,500 or so candidates for not meeting those basic qualifications. You have to be between the ages of 30 and 75. You have to support Iran's theocratic system of government, show proof of an associate's degree or some other form of higher education, be in good health, things of that nature. And you can't have an obviously poor reputation in your district, something staining your public record, you know, something on the books, a financial crime or something along those lines. Then those candidates got thrown over to the Guardian Council, which is a powerful and unelected body of 12 clerics and Islamic scholars. And they disqualified about 9,500 of the remaining 14,000 candidates, including 90 incumbent lawmakers. So this was this has happened in previous years, but not quite to this extent. In this case, basically, we're left with even after repeals and the Guardian Council allowing in another 2,000 candidates, only a little less than half of those who signed up to begin with are going to be allowed to run. And yep. So this was even more brazen for a system that usually isn't terribly transparent about what the criteria is in general. And so there have been even more widespread allegations of election engineering in this case.
Right. So amongst those who will actually be able to run, is there genuinely free campaigning and a real choice, or is there pressure on voters to vote a particular way?
There isn't a terrible amount of choice in this election. The reformist camp, which is arguably the more liberal of the various factions inside Iran, was basically shut out from this election. In the vast majority of constituencies, no reformists even made it past the vetting process. And in cases where some reformists did make it through, they weren't big names and are not likely to have enough to even coalesce around a united list in a number of the constituencies. For example, in Tehran, the capital, which has the most seats for any one constituency, 30, the reformists have decided to sit this one out rather than to field a short stacked list or with names that people wouldn't recognize.
So when you say reformists, I suppose in Australia we think of elections as being between political parties. I understand in Iran it's more about factions. Other than the reformists, what other factions are there and what's the balance of power going into the election?
So it would be helpful to think of Iran in terms of kind of four broad political factions. First, the reformists that we mentioned. Then you also have a group of centrists, or some would say moderates. These are people that are more going to fall into the category of the current president, Hassan Rouhani, and also former president Hashemi Rafsanjani. So this faction supports the underlying constitutional structure of Iran. They back maybe a return to more technocratic governance, but they favor economic liberalization and some diplomatic engagement with the West. Sort of maybe to the right of them, you have mainstream conservatives, which also support the system. Some of these are going to be more likely to be more conservative clerics, but this group tends to kind of represent the entrance of the merchant class or bazaari class. And then beyond after that group, you have hardliners, or what some people would refer to as principalists. This group is going to be more opposed to negotiations with the West. They're going to their slogans are going to be more about self-sufficiency, and they support usually greater state intervention in social and political life.
And so what's the balance of power between the centrists, the conservatives, and the hardliners? It sounds like the reformists are well on the outer at the moment.
Yeah, so this parliament is definitely on track to be dominated by conservatives. Now, part of the question is what type of conservative? So in a case like this where the reformists are more or less shut out, you're starting to see a lot more sort of conservative infighting or rivalries bubble up. So, for example, in Tehran, you have various different flavors of conservatives running on three different lists. One is headed by sort of a self-styled neo-principalist, the current mayor of Tehran, Mohammad Bagar Ghalibaf. In addition to that, you have another list that's headed by hardliners backed by a really, really conservative cleric, Ayatollah Mezbah Yazdi. And then you also have this other group that is still alive and kicking are the followers of former President Ahmadinejad. So these is a more populist brand of conservatism that are represented in their own list. So the next parliament is going to be more or is likely to be a balance of these various conservative groups, probably a fair number of independents and some sort of lower ranking reformists that are going to be able to squeak by.
As we heard, the economic situation is very dire, 90% contraction in the Iranian economy. How important is the economy as an issue in this election?
The economy is definitely the main issue in the election. It's something that it increasingly affects all aspects or all groups within Iran's population. It used to be that, you know, some of the elites and others were able to be shielded from some of the effects of sanctions. But given the decline in oil exports and the increase in prices, people are really seeing, you know, their life savings and other things dry up. Yeah. Even if you have money, you've been investing in gold and real estate and other things, but even that's not necessarily safe anymore. So inflation and high costs are the most important thing,
right.
Definitely.
Yeah. Given that the main impact is from sanctions, are there meaningful differences between the different factions about how to approach the economy?
Well, actually, there was some interesting polling done in fall 2019, and a national poll, and Iranians were asked, which of the following do you think has the greatest negative impact? And the first choice was foreign sanctions and pressure, and the other one was domestic mismanagement and corruption. And actually, more people thought that the domestic corruption and mismanagement were really an issue. So Iranians are aware that their own political class have problems with dealing with what little money the government does have to spend. So it's sanctions is not the only issue at play. So with so many different types of conservatives running, you will see people accusing the current system of getting too fat and that there are places to trim.
Right. On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Garrett Nada, managing editor of the US Institutes for Peace Iran Primer. Garrett, obviously there are huge concerns about the international implications of the assassination of Qasem Soleimani and then the shooting down of that Ukrainian passenger with so many Iranians on board. How do those events play into the parliamentary elections?
Foreign policy is definitely a subtext of the election. As you mentioned, sanctions and the increasing pressure with the U.S. is definitely on people's minds. Foreign policy is not necessarily something that's going to come up as an election issue in terms of different platforms having different policies. The public has generally been supportive of the government's response to the U.S. Stepping away from the JCPOA, for example, of Iran curtailing its commitments to the deal. And there was a lot of public rallying around Qasem Soleimani in terms of his funeral and other things. So amongst the conservatives, there isn't necessarily much of a difference on these issues. They, were generally opposed the West, rapprochement with some of Iran's Gulf rivals, et cetera. So something that is on the minds of voters, though, definitely is the increase in U.S.-Iran tensions and the threat of war. This is a population that saw a devastating 8-year war with Iraq in the 1980s and international isolation, and that's something that they definitely don't want to repeat. So voters may be looking for candidates that are less likely to miscalculate and get into a wider conflict.
I seem to recall that in what was described as the Green Movement and the 2009 presidential election, there was a very strong level of support amongst young people for the Green Movement in that election. How important is the young demographic in this election, and what are the issues facing young people in particular?
The youth demographic is really depending on how big you or how, what slice of the population you want to take. But in general, the youth are the biggest voting block, and they will be going forward. The thing is that they've sort of been kept out of politics in some ways. And so one way that you're seeing, even amongst the conservatives this year in this election, there's a group of young conservatives called, referring to themselves as justice seekers, that are really sick of sort of the institutional or the establishment conservatives that think that some of these guys have been in politics for so long and they've really taken advantage of the system and become corrupt. And even some of the hardliner or more like members of the Basij, which is kind of the militia at Amir Kabir University, put out an open letter criticizing the Guardian Council's vetting process. So you even see amongst conservatives are frustrated with the lack of political space or the current establishment in some ways. So for the youth unemployment is about 24% as of fall last year. And so they're going to be looking to candidates that can figure out ways to actually create jobs and real growth, not just trim around the edges.
Apparently, there are rumors circulating that the current president, Hassan Rouhani, may resign. What are your thoughts on where that rumor is coming from and what substance there might be to it?
The most likely source of this would be any numbers of Rouhani's conservative critics, either in or outside of parliament. A lot of people have attributed this to Ali Reza Zakani, who's a former parliamentarian with close links to the Revolutionary Guards, which is the sort of secondary or the branch of Iran's military that's more ideological and committed to the principles of the Islamic Revolution. So it would make sense that conservatives would circulate this sort of rumor. Rouhani already is increasingly looking like a lame duck, and talk about him stepping down, perhaps like the narrative would be that in the face of U.S. pressure and other things, that he isn't able to do much in reply, and that, you know, stepping down would be the thing, would be a possibility. So that make the most sense.
Right. We spoke at the beginning of the interview about the exclusion, effectively, of the reformist faction. How much support does the reformist faction have, and does that mean that there are larger political pressures not being ventilated through this election? What prospects are there that those pressures will play out in coming years?
Well, given that the reformists are more or less going to be sitting out this election, they may be able to retain a certain amount of credibility and sort of regroup ahead of the upcoming presidential election. So a lot can happen in a year, especially in Iran. So we may see that some of that pent-up pressure may get released in other types of protests, either on the economy or on, you know, the government may have another misstep. Maybe not along the lines of accidentally shooting down an airliner, but if there is pressure on the government to open up the political system between this parliamentary election and the upcoming presidential election, you may see that, you know, maybe some centrists or maybe even a reformist is allowed to run. And in that case, the reformists actually might be more well-placed, being that they won't be associated with parliament in that sense.
Well, it's a fascinating situation. We'll keep an eye on it, and I'm sure you will be too. Garrett Nader, thank you very much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you.
Garrett Nader is the managing editor of the U.S. Institute for Peace's Iran Primer.